Welcome to Shoot Like a Girl, a podcast featuring interviews with extraordinary military women from around the world who push their limits on and off duty. I'm your host, Kate Stewart, and this is episode number 42. Today's guest is Audrey Dufresne. Audrey is an athletic therapist and a reservist in the Canadian Armed Forces. She's also the head coach for the Athena program. This training program is the first of its kind for female veterans in Canada, and it's completely subsidized by Veterans Affairs Canada and the Quebec Veterans Foundation.
Steady, nice and steady. Light, hill, cover. I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
So you better get out of my way now.
So you better get out of my way now.
Or I roll all over you.
Before I roll all over you.
Audrey, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So where did you grow up?
I moved around quite a bit, so that's always a difficult question. But my early childhood, I did grow up in northern Quebec. Abitibi, Témiscamingue is where I did kind of my early childhood.
Okay, and what did your parents do that you moved around so much?
I think it's just life. Yeah, just life happening, because they weren't military, actually. My dad was an economic consultant. My mom worked in HR. Originally, that's where my family is from, my grandparents, and where my parents grew up. And even though I wasn't born there, they always wanted to bring us back there. So we did live up north, Quebec, for that little while. But then we moved around kind of in the area around Montreal, South Shore Montreal. And I actually happened to do my high school in Massachusetts. And after that would have been 11th grade, I moved on my own to Montreal to do CEGEP. I really wanted to go back and do that instead of doing one more year of high school and doing 12th grade. I decided to go back. So I was living in residence in Montreal.
So I'm assuming that your first language is French. Was it difficult then going to school in Massachusetts?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That was interesting, because growing up, my first language is French, and you get second language classes. I thought I wasn't so bad, but then when I moved, that's really when reality checked in. That was quite intense the first few months of living there. So I would have been in ninth grade. I started freshman year. And I remember, like, even the first class I attended, you know, they were taking attendance and I didn't even know how to answer. And everyone was answering like here, but me and my French accent, I just went here, and everyone started cracking up. And yeah, that was the start of my English speaking school experience.
I guess knowing what you do now for a living, were you a very active kid growing up? Were you always involved in like sports and physical activity?
Yeah, I tried all the sports. I would say I haven't even stuck to one specific sport except for dance. I actually danced all my life. That I did stick with. But sports, I tried all of them. So every year it would be something else, you know, soccer, volleyball, track, lacrosse, all of it.
Yeah, I was the same way growing up. And, you know, I think it's kind of neat when you hear about people who stick to one sport and then go all the way to the Olympics or a very high level. But for me, I'm like, I'm okay with being just mediocre at everything. I want to try absolutely every sport and activity.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it's just, you know, being curious. That's not a bad thing. But yeah, I don't think I was a pro at any of them particularly. Ended up just trying all of them. But it's good. It gave me good experience now looking back, now that I'm an athletic therapist, because I feel like I've got to see a lot of different sports, and it helps me in my work as well now, knowing a little bit about each of them.
And when you were growing up, did you have any military members in your family, or did you know anything about the military at all?
Not at all. Yeah, it's very strange. Now that I am in the military, I hear of extended members that did serve that I didn't know about before. But in my more immediate family, I was the first one to join. And my brother actually ended up following after that as well.
When you went to school in Montreal, what did you go to school for?
Yeah, so in CEGEP, which would be college, I guess, maybe in other areas of Canada. I did a dance diploma, so a contemporary dance. And I actually did a double diploma because I knew I wouldn't do that in university. So I wanted to get some science classes in my back pocket to apply for different things in university. So yeah, I ended up doing kind of a double science and dance.
So for those who don't know, and I guess I'm not overly familiar with it, in Quebec, Cégep is like a bridge between high school and university.
Yeah, because high school finishes at 11th grade with 11th grade. So we don't have a 12th grade. So we end up doing 2 years of Cégep before going into university. And most degrees are only 3 years instead of four. So there's kind of like that last year of high school and that first year of university that's put together to make Cégep, if that makes sense, is how I understand it.
And then from there, you went on to go to university?
Yeah, I went to Concordia University in Montreal. I did athletic therapy degree there.
Okay, so did you know pretty early on that that's what you wanted to pursue?
No, I don't think I would have known. So growing up, I really thought I wanted to do communications, actually. Journalism or some type of media communication. I was really into that. Actually, when my mom and I went and visited universities together, I visited the communication departments. But after doing my dance diploma in Cégep, I feel like that's really when I started connecting a little bit more with my physical fitness side and physical activity. You know, in the dance program, they would basically introduce you to weightlifting and a bunch of other physical preparation complementary to dance. And so I started really getting interested in that. And I got my personal training certification back then. And while I was working in what would be kind of the equivalent of Good Life Fitness in Quebec, I met a bunch of different trainers that were actually studying to become athletic therapists. And they were telling me about it. And I realized that I actually had been around athletic therapists my whole life playing sports. You know, like going to high school in the States, we always had an athletic trainer, is what they call it there, on our bench waiting for one of us to get injured and to hop in and help us out or treat us after the games. So I realized, like, yeah, I've actually always known about them, but never thought about being one. But I realized that it was kind of bridging the gap between personal training, which is more preparation to, you know, physical activity, and then rehabbing injuries after they happen. Athletic therapy is a nice bridge, kind of all encompassing that. So it got me really hooked.
And when you were growing up and playing sports and doing dance, did you have any significant injuries that you experienced that you had to overcome?
I've been pretty lucky. In dance, it was like the obvious ankle sprain, you know, doing ballet. I had so many ankle sprains and actually quite a bit of chronic back pain. Growing up, yeah, I can remember as far back as being 10 years old with back pain. I would go chiropractor, physiotherapist, massage therapist. My poor mother was bringing me every week to all sorts of different therapists to figure out what was going on. And then when I stopped dancing, actually the back pain went away. So it must have been the dancing. But other than just chronic kind of pain, ankle, feet pain, I never actually sustained an acute injury. So I've been lucky.
Yeah. I mean, I know in high school, you know, we had some girls on the basketball team like blow out their ACLs and things like that. And then they would miss the season, which would affect their getting into college. And it's kind of crazy when you think about it for someone so young to have such a significant injury that could potentially impact their future and scholarship opportunities and everything along those lines.
Totally. Your identity when you're an athlete like that, your identity is so closely tied to your sport, right? So it's like everything falls apart almost when you do get injured. So that is something I do deal with as a therapist now with my athletes that I treat. I do end up kind of being a little bit of a psychotherapist at the same time because they'll, you know, share how much it affects them. But I haven't lived that firsthand as much.
Do you have a particular demographic that you enjoy working with the most, like maybe college age athletes or women who are whatever, like any specific demographic that you sort of connect with the most?
I like a variety, I think. I used to really enjoy like college level, university level, really high pace. That was really a lot of fun when I was living in Montreal. I had access to that kind of population. There's a lot of different schools in Montreal, so that makes it a little easier. But now living in Petawawa in Ontario, I find it's a little bit harder to get with teams. Obviously, we don't really have like any universities around, or it's just smaller clubs and high schools. So I've been working with a lot more military since I've been here, early law enforcement or firefighters, and I do enjoy that quite a bit. That I would say that really fuels me right now.
And after you finished university, what did your sort of career path look like, and how long was it before you joined the military?
I joined actually while I was in university. If I'm thinking correctly. So I haven't graduated that long ago. I'm a 2021 graduate. So I was still in Montreal back then. And so I worked with a private clinic that was called Specific Performance. They actually have now a couple different locations in Montreal, and we would cover tournaments of all sorts of sports. I could cover hockey, ultimate frisbee, basketball, all sorts of sports. I actually was going weekly to an arena as well to help with figure skaters. That was a lot of fun. And I would just treat clients as well in the clinic. So not always on the field, but also building kind of a clientele. And then I moved to Petawawa, and that kind of changed because I don't do as much of the field coverage and I do more in clinic stuff. But I actually joined the forces probably a couple months into my university program. It would have been 2018.
And how did you hear about it? And how did you decide which trade you wanted to join?
Yeah, okay. I heard about it because in the gym I was working at, a lot of different people, really interesting people I met there. And one of my colleagues went to basic training, decided to join the forces, and was getting ready to go to basic. And I was asking questions and, you know, what is that about? And yeah, he was just telling me, you know, if you don't want to join the regular force, you can join the reserve. And he was like, how about you just go to the recruiting center in Montreal and check it out? So I just went and asked questions. And I was like, well, why not? Why not try this? And with kind of just no idea what I was getting myself into, actually, just on a whim. And I had in my mind to be a medic. But for some reason at that time at the recruiting center, they weren't encouraging that. They were like, yeah, we don't really have any room. How about you look at these other regiments? And I ended up picking the one closest to my house. I was the simplest. So I ended up being the RMR, the Royal Montreal Regiment, which is an infantry regiment in Montreal.
So you were infantry originally?
Yeah, I was.
Wow. Okay. So how was that?
Well, so I said I was infantry, but I actually didn't get to do the whole process because as soon as I got in the unit, I still had in my mind that I wanted to go medic. I thought it was going to be really interesting to connect that to my athletic therapy studies. So as soon as I finished basic, I was telling them, like, I want to put in to switch units. I did love the RMR. However, it's an amazing unit. I actually, looking back, I wish I had stayed longer because I really did love it there. But I didn't actually do the DP1. I just trained with them. And I was there for almost a year and a half, I think, I was at that unit. And then I was able to transfer out to the medic unit.
Yeah, it's when you think about it, it's too bad that recruiters do that. And I know that they probably have a quota that they have to meet and there aren't spots in certain areas. But I think maybe pushing someone to, if they go in through the door and they have an idea of what they want to do, this is it, I'm set, I know what I want to do. And then they try to steer them into something that they don't want to do. I think a lot of people get out for that reason, because I know, you know, I went to BMQ with some people who were kind of steered into being cooks or some trade that they didn't want to do, and they're not in the military anymore. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, maybe it does. Yeah, for me, it actually turned out being a pleasant surprise because I made a lot of friends that I'm still really close to now at that unit. So it turned out okay. But ultimately, now I'm still a medic now, and that's what I really do enjoy the most. So.
And what's the difference between training for a reg force medic and a reserve medic?
With the reserve medic course, obviously you do, you know, basic training, the BMQ, you do BMQ land, which is kind of the field portion. then you do what we call QL3, QL4. So one of them is more of a field medic and the other one's more of a clinic medic. And for us on a reservist level, that's where it ends if you don't have a paramedic background, which I don't have. And so it stops there for me. I become a medical assistant. But when you join the reg force, they put you through QL5, which is paramedic training. And you actually end up going to New Brunswick and working in that environment, I think, for 6 months. And you become a medical technician. If you're a reservist and you are already a paramedic, then you just get that medical technician possibility in there. But for me, that would not be a possibility.
And so what does that look like if you want to, say, train with a field unit or work at a clinic? Are you still able to do that in sort of a, I guess, restricted scope of practice?
Yeah, so the scope of practice is a little bit more restricted. Certain maneuvers are reserved only for the medical tech, but we're actually able to do quite a bit. It's a lot of fun. So we can still go in the field exercise and we can still work, you know, at sick parade, for example. But there's just certain little tasks in our procedures that we then have to delegate to the med tech.
And so did you have to do any of the work during COVID, like in the long-term care homes or any of the things that the military was doing to support that?
No, and I so wish I had. So at the time, I actually did, but more as a civilian. At the time, I wasn't qualified as a medical assistant yet. I was supposed to go on my course. That was the summer of 2020. And they all courses were canceled. And they were like, we can't send you either because you're not a qualified member, which made me sad because I wanted to help. So in the end, since I was already quite advanced in my athletic therapy program, I had, advanced emergency care courses and stuff like that. I was able to go work in the homes, but as a civilian hired by private companies that would go in and help the nurses.
Mm-hmm. And what was that experience like?
That was a little bit strange. I would not want to live that again. It's more on an emotional level strange. Yeah, so I happened to work in homes that were really for Alzheimer's and dementia patients, which made it really, really difficult because they just weren't understanding why we were keeping them all separate. And it was, now looking back, almost inhumane conditions where people would just be isolated in their rooms for weeks at a time and knocking on the door saying, like, can I just get out? And you're like, no, this is for your own good. You need to stay. And that was really hard. And everyone talks about PPE and stuff, but you kind of get over that. It's just repeating over and over, you know, this is for your own good. And you're like, is it really? That was hard.
I had to isolate for, I think it was 5 or 7 days before going on a course during that time. And even that was like pretty difficult, right? Like you're just in this little room. We were able to go outside into a little roped off area in the parking lot. But I mean, for sort of the younger generation, like at least we have cell phones and FaceTime, we can kind of communicate. But I can't even imagine for someone who's a senior, they generally don't use those devices and don't have that connection. And just being in that environment for such a prolonged time would be so hard on them.
Yeah, it was hard. So I remember as the restrictions kind of eased a little bit, they would allow us to hang out with them in their room a little bit more, you know, with the PPE, obviously, but at least I could spend a little bit of time talking to them. So it wasn't just me walking the hallways and just giving them the food quickly and stepping out. It was a little bit more of that connection with them, which I hope helped a little bit.
Yeah. And hopefully we don't ever have to go back to that environment like the way it was before. So how did you get connected with Dave Morrow?
Okay. Dave Morrow is a veteran from the Montreal area. So small community. You know, at the time when I was at the RMR with the infantry, we were doing a lot of ruck marches and just working out. And Dave Morrow would come in and give us kind of workshops, I guess, and training sessions. The unit had found a little budget to hire him and give us tips and lead us on some ruck marches. It's just training. So that's how I initially met him. He is from CGG in Montreal, but he would go around and see a couple of the infantry reserve units and help them out with training.
And so I guess when you're in Montreal, do they have PSP staff or anyone there, or are the units just kind of on their own when it comes to physical training?
It's interesting because the PSP is very small. So the gym, for example, and the PSP area in Montreal is not what you would see, for example, like versus Pedawa, where it's huge, very small and Long Point in Montreal. So as reservists, we don't get exposed to that much. So we're really, it's more on our own time to figure out how to train or with our unit.
What do you think some of the obstacles when it comes to that would be? I guess it's good that that unit had Dave that they could use as a resource, but for some units that don't, you know, where might they start or how do you think they should implement a good training program?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that's lacking, you know, having even just a PSP staff coming even just once a week leading a unit PT would be awesome. Because I do find that quite a bit of recruits show up and will end up struggling because they don't know where to start. And just for me, for example, when I joined, I had no idea what the military was about. So I was lucky that I was a personal trainer and I was, you know, exercising quite a bit, but it's not always the case. So it's definitely a limitation.
Yeah, I think when I started too, it was, you know, I was into fitness and had played sports, but I don't think I knew anything about sticking to a regimented training program or what type of things I was going to be doing on BMQ, like the ruck marches, push-ups, that type of thing. Like, I just really had no idea.
Same here. I had never done a ruck march before BMQ.
Did you find, so being from an athletic background, did you find that BMQ was physically difficult for you, or were you sort of okay with everything?
I think I was okay on BMQ. Yeah, I ended up kind of liking it too at the same time. It was different than what I had known. So leading up to BMQ, I actually was really into bodybuilding. I had done a bodybuilding competition. I was very much into hypertrophy and, you know, just lifting weights. But there's a lot more endurance, you know, body weight endurance that's incorporated too in BMQ. So it was different. So it was challenging, but I think ultimately I did okay. But I did, now that I think back, I did have kind of an Achilles tendonitis by the end of it. And most likely through the ruck marches, you know, my tendons and my joints weren't ready for that kind of sustained load that I hadn't trained for. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, now I guess once you're past BMQ, it's a little bit better where you can buy your own boots. But the ones that we use on BMQ are probably not doing your feet any favors, right? So,
or they're just not the right size. And it's like, oops, sorry, there you go. You just got to suck it up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So how did you end up working with Dave and sort of partnering with him for this Athena program?
I ended up graduating from athletic therapy in 2021. So I reached out to Dave a couple months before. We had already met, obviously, through the Armor and all that. And I just saw how his business was thriving, online coaching and all that. And I told him, if ever you need someone for kind of the women in your group, because he was solo. And I was like, I'm here and I'm finishing school soon. So I'm kind of interested in any partnership you might have for me. And he was like, actually, I've been talking with the Quebec Veteran Foundation about putting together a women's only program. But he's like, obviously, I don't feel like I'm the right person to do that. So he was like, how about we just put it together, but you'll be ultimately the coach and I'll take care more of the admin. So I was like, that sounds amazing. So the Athena program, he kind of got the ball rolling in 2020. And then in 2021 is when I picked it up and started becoming the official coach on there.
And so for those listening, do you want to give a quick explanation of what the Athena program is?
Mm-hmm. So the Athena program has evolved quite a bit, but ultimately it's a 12-week entirely subsidized program that's online for retired women of the CAF. And it's funded by the Veterans Affairs and the Quebec Veteran Foundation. And it's a 12-week program where you're provided with three different training plans that are 4 weeks each. And an amazing group of women that do it with you, because we take now 20 women at a time on this group. We do weekly check-ins together where we chat like this online. I'm also always reachable. So it's a really awesome online free resource for veteran women. And now we are also incorporating things like nutrition and sports psychology into it. So just something to get you back into fitness after retiring. Or sometimes it's not even about getting back into fitness. It's just continuing and getting a different program in, because we cater to everyone. You could be a newbie or you could be a pro. I have all sorts of exercises and programs available in Athene.
And so how would someone apply for this?
So the application form is on our website, on the athenaprogram.net, or you can always email us as well and we can send you the link. But we do have one website to refer to with the application.
And so from talking to these women who have gone through the program, I guess before they started, what was their biggest barrier to maybe getting back into fitness or starting a program?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is the biggest barrier is just the lack of structure leaving the forces. What I'm hearing is that they feel they don't have that person telling them what to do, telling them when the group PT is or what type of training to do. They don't really have any baseline of where to go from here. And so what I hear is accountability, lack of structure. Those are the things that were making it difficult to get back into fitness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's so much out there. There's so many different programs and it can be hard to decide what to do. So in that sense, it's sort of overloaded with information and options. And then you just end up not doing any of them because you can't decide which one to do. And that's, I guess, how I feel sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And it takes a while sometimes finding what works for you. And the Athena might just be a good step stone. You know, it might not, obviously it's not the end game. It's only 12 weeks, right? So it might be just the introduction you need to kind of get back into a routine. But it does get overwhelming, all the different options out there. So I guess that's kind of a way it can help veteran women too. It's specific to them. It's not vague. It's for retired veteran women. Are you in or not?
Mm-hmm. Does this require a full gym or is this something that they can do from home?
It doesn't require much. Actually, we cater to really every different situation. So if you want to work out in the gym, great. We'll get you a program for that. But if you want to work out from home and all you have is elastic bands, we can do that too. So yeah, it's really up to you. Obviously, we encourage you if you feel motivated to get different equipment and you want to spruce up your home gym, great, but you don't have to.
Okay, so you were mentioning how they can reach you and connect with you, but these women in the program, can they all connect with each other somehow when they're in the same cohort?
Good question. Yeah, so we have a group chat going. We use this app where pretty much everything takes place on that app. It's called Train Rise. So your program's on there, the group chat is on there, the chat with me is there. And that's where I do all of the updates. I send the Google Meet links for when we meet together. So when we do weekly meetings, you know, all of us are on there with our cameras or no cameras and we just chat so they can connect through those weekly meetings or through the group chat.
From your, I guess, experience as maybe a medic and an athletic therapist, are there any specific injuries that you've noticed from maybe veteran women or women that are still serving that might be a frequent occurrence compared to what their male counterparts go through?
Well, I was going to say right off the bat when you asked, you know, knees, osteoarthritis in the knees, but I think that's also quite predominant in males as well. So I think that might just be military-wide. But yes, the knees for sure. Osteoarthritis for veteran women in general, it could be, you know, in the neck and back and a little bit all over. I also find a low back pain is a big one as well. So often there's a lot of low impact exercises or mobility to loosen up the back and the knees and shoulders.
Yeah, I feel like That's definitely a very common one, is the low back pain. Definitely something I experience as well that I'm sort of trying to work through, but it feels like just years of wear and tear. And like we were talking about earlier, the ruck marches and the various PT and just different things you experience throughout your career definitely adds up in the end. It's good though that to keep doing this and to keep moving, because even I went to see a doctor before just to try and get a referral, you know, and I was mentioning how at my lower back, I was having this pain when I'm deadlifting, and his option was just, well, don't do deadlifts. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not just going to not work out if something hurts, you know, and then I'll just very quickly find myself not doing anything at all. So I think that, how do I word this? Sometimes the advice is conflicting, and it's like, just because you do have one injury or an injury to a certain area, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to stop working out completely and stop being active, because often that's not the solution at all.
That's correct. Yeah. And that's where my background as an athletic therapist is helpful, I find, in the Athena program with veteran women, because they all have something going on. So if we were just going to tell them, well, don't do that, none of them would be participating. Like, it's just impossible. So we have alternatives. And sometimes, yeah, it's just dumbing down the exercise, coming back to the root, you know, doing, instead of doing the deadlift, you know, with weights, start with just an elastic, get the range of motion cleared without any pain before we start loading. One of many examples, but yeah, it would be impossible to just avoid any kind of pain, but we got to find ways to work with minimal pain and sometimes strengthen that range of motion, and we'll get there.
Mm-hmm. I was reading, I'll have to look it up and maybe put it in the show notes, but I think there were some studies on injuries to women. I think there was one that women were more likely to get injured doing the force test. And I did see on Facebook, there was sort of a group of military women, and they were saying, like, how can we make the force test more fair for women? And I understand where they're coming from, but to a certain extent, this job requires you to lift equipment that's not going to be lighter if you're smaller. It's just the gear is the gear. Like, if you're moving a casualty, the casualty is not going to be lighter because you're smaller than a male.
Totally. It's about how do we prepare them physically beforehand. So that kind of goes back to what we were saying about how sometimes you're left on your own for reservists, at least to train, and then you don't pass the force test. Well, let's work on prevention and physical preparedness and make it happen.
I think, you know, and I hope that it's kind of increasing, because now there's a lot of the fitness influencers on the internet, but I think it has gotten more younger women in the gym lifting weights. But I think that perhaps those injuries have maybe been caused by people not strength training enough. And then when it comes time to do that high repetition, something like the force test where you're lifting the sandbag 30 times in a row and you're doing the shuttles with the sandbag, if you haven't strength trained properly, then yes, you are probably more likely going to get injured doing that.
Yeah. And there's also the specificity component to it. You might have strength trained, but if you haven't picked up a sandbag, you know, it's different. It's not like a dumbbell. How are you going to pick it up? It's awkward. And so being specific about your training, practicing those type with that type of equipment, those kinds of movements, that will be really helpful as well. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't done it in a while, but I used to kind of add little bits of it into my workout. So after my workout, I would go do some of the intermittent loaded shuttles, or I'd go do a set of like 10 of the sandbag lifts and then go do something else and just do little bits of it at a time, and finding those ways to make it easier. Like, what's the easiest way for me? What's the position that I need to be in to lift this, to get it up onto my shoulder? What's the best position for me to carry it in? And it's all about those little like trial and error, because everyone has a different body type. Some people are way taller, some people are shorter, and just have different strength, right? So you got to find out what works for your body type.
That's the way to do it. Yeah, being as specific as possible to what you're going to be doing.
So now you are working full-time for the military, is that correct? And then doing athletic therapy on the side?
I'm doing pretty much three jobs at the same time. Yeah, so I'm actually on a full-time contract as a reservist here in Petawawa. But I also still see my clientele. I have an office space the town over, where I see clients kind of in the afternoon and evenings, and then I run the Athena program.
So how do you manage all of your time between those things?
A lot of lists, a lot of Google Calendar. I was just meal prepping earlier to make my week as smooth as possible. You know, I've got the lunches ready, the breakfast ready, and I'm a big planner. So I've got all the color-coded stuff in my Google Calendar. And that morning at that time, I'm working out, and then I'm going to work, and then I'm going to eat, and then I'm going to go to this second job and organization.
Yeah, I always used to have an agenda, like a paper one. Because I'm still kind of old school, where I like to look at my month and see what's written out. And then I didn't buy one for this year, and I missed a medical appointment on Monday. And I was just like, oh no, I need to get an agenda now. Need to get a planner. But another thing I was going to ask you, because I did see your post earlier today about the meal planning. So when you prep those meals, how long do you keep them for in the refrigerator? Like, how many days ahead of time do you prep?
Pretty much 5 days. Yeah. It's pretty good. I haven't gotten sick yet. I prep on Sundays, and it goes all the way through Friday pretty much. So it works out.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I did some of the bodybuilding competitions back in the day as well. And I would do the meal prep, and then I'd always get so worried if I left it for a few days. I'd be like, oh, I'm not sure if this is still good to eat. And then I did see some people that were doing it and then kind of refreezing their meals, but I'm not sure that's the greatest either.
Yeah, well, that's true. Frozen meals don't taste the same. I don't freeze them. But yeah, so I'll usually make, you know, my five lunches, five breakfasts, and I'll cook the dinner at night. But what I found has been super helpful recently is doing my meal prep in kind of the Pyrex dish, you know, the glass stove resistant or oven resistant dish. And I make them individually like that, put them in the stove individually, and it just, they're ready to go after they're out. So I don't have extra dishes from grilling things separately and then putting them in the dish. Everything's done already separate. And so I don't have a ton of dishes to do after I'm done. I just use them and wash them as I go throughout the week. I found that's been super helpful.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I bought an air fryer last year, and I found it. I got the big super one with the two drawers so that I can, you know, cook meat and veggies at the same time. And I've found that really helpful. It really cuts back on time, because things that used to take, you know, 45, 50 minutes in the oven, now it's like 20 minutes and they're done, and it's so easy. And like you said, it's, if you've got a lot of stuff going on and you're busy, you have to keep organized, especially if you have certain like fitness and nutrition goals, you have to stay on top of it and like stay organized with everything.
Yeah. And even just from a stress level standpoint, I find, you know, I'm already at peace with my week because I know I've got things sorted. I know what my lunches are going to be. I'm going to have time in the morning. I won't rush because my breakfast is ready. So yeah, fitness and nutrition goals for sure, but it also helps me feel a little bit more in control of my week.
And you're not going out and spending $20 on lunch every day.
Yeah, because it gets pretty crazy nowadays, the prices.
With the Athena program and with the nutrition, is it more, are you doing specific like macro-based training or calories in, calories out? Or is it just more of like a holistic how to eat healthier and how to fuel your body?
Yeah, more like the latter. We like to keep the Athena program stress-free as well. So whether it's about metrics for working out, you know, reps and sets, or whether it's metrics for food like calories in and out, I am pretty laid back about that. I don't want anyone to feel too much pressure or feeling like it's too much asked of them. So they can use calorie counting if they want to. Our app synchronizes really well with MyFitnessPal, for example. So some ladies love that. But otherwise, we kind of just talk about the big lines of nutrition. We have an amazing holistic nutritionist that we partner with now that does capsules for us, and also live sessions where she can answer questions, and she talks about things like gut health, stress management, menopause through nutrition. So how can we make those things or manage those things through nutrition?
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like such an amazing program. So hopefully doing this podcast and getting the word out there a little bit more, hopefully you'll have some more interest coming along. Okay, awesome. And then I guess I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about, because your work is so complementary, right? That what you do in the military as a medic and then as an athletic trainer. So what lessons have you learned from maybe the military that you can bring back to being an athletic trainer and then vice versa?
Yeah. Well, it kind of goes back to that specificity component. I find, you know, being an athletic therapist trainer in this area and being a military member has really helped me serve the community better because the patients that I see are military. So when they talk to me about going on this course or whatever, I can relate a little bit or I can utilize a little bit of my knowledge. So yeah, definitely helps me figure out the best exercise that will be specific to them. You know, if we're rehabbing a knee injury, we have to rehab it for ruck marchers, for example. It's not the same as a football player that needs to do rotational movements and sprints necessarily. So I do find my military experience has helped me really treat the community better. And then the other way around, being an athletic therapist has provided me a lot of knowledge about what we call MSK in the military, so musculoskeletal. As a medic, that's one of the things you'll see the most, actually. When you're here at home, it's going to be a lot of the sprains and the strains or the chronic back pain. So when I'm in a clinic environment and people come through with MSK stuff, well, it makes it easier for me because I have that background that's specific to MSK.
Just out of curiosity, I guess, and I know everyone's different, so everyone probably has different treatment programs, but what do you find? Is there a common thing that's worked best for back pain for people, or is it really dependent on the individual?
It's very dependent on the person. So many different things can cause back pain. But I do have an advice that I tend to give, and it's very vague, but it's just a starting point. So back pain, oftentimes we think about low back pain too. And oftentimes that low back is compensating for the joint above and below. Okay, so in the case of the low back, we're looking at the hip joint, which is the one below, or the thoracic spine, which is the upper back. So you got to look, okay, am I tight in my hips? Am I tight in my upper back? Or do I not have strong hips and have really weak hips? What is my low back compensating for? So looking above and below is usually a good starting point. So I often see either really, really tight hips or actually no strength around the glutes, for example. And then there's no support for your back, or your back's trying to get that extra mobility because the hips are so tight. And so it's all about balance. And so that's where I would start.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And that's sort of, I guess I'm dealing with that too. I'm like, I know my T-spine mobility sucks and like my quads take over everything. So my glutes are weak and it's just like that whole cascading effect. But I know it's kind of hard to get and you have to get the right doctor and be kind of persistent. But I have gotten chiro treatments this past year and I found you have to find the right chiro as well. You know, mine was someone who's very involved in a lot of athletic people and first responders. Like he works with a lot of the police emergency response team and some of the pro baseball players in town and that type of thing. So that versus someone who's the kind of old man in like a white lab coat cracking your back, you've got to kind of get someone that's beyond that, right?
Yeah, sometimes finding the right therapist is a long search. So, you know, even finding, do I need a chiro or do I need a physio? Do I need an athletic therapist or a massage therapist? It takes a little bit of time and searching sometimes. But once you find the right person, it can be quite helpful.
Mm-hmm. I guess, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Any other topics?
I think that's great. I mean, we've mentioned the program is subsidized.
Yeah. So when people apply for it, like, is it something that they have to pay for up front and get reimbursed for, or does it go through somehow?
Oh, super simple. So thank God we don't have to do it that way. We deal with all that background work. So you just put your application through on our website and we have ask questions like, you know, your name, are you retired from the military or are you active? Because we only take retired members. Are you a woman? Because it's a women's only program. But otherwise, once your application is through and you're that next person on our list, we just email you back and we're like, hey, it's your turn. You're up on the list. Do you want to participate? Are you ready? Yes, no. And then you're going. It's as simple as that. We don't ask you to pay for anything or give us much more information than just your contact info and your name.
And then I guess because I do have some male listeners, Dave has a program for male veterans now, doesn't he?
Dave specializes with male veterans. However, we don't have a subsidized program for them yet. So that is out of pocket, but he does cater to men veteran specifically.
Okay. Yeah, I can put a link to that as well in the little notes so that if anyone's any men listening want to go find him, then we'll definitely put a little link in there for them. And then my final question that I always ask everyone is, what advice would you give to women looking to join the military?
I would say there's a place for you. So don't be afraid or maybe intimidated by what the military might sound like. My experience has been wonderful. So I would say no matter what your style is or even your fitness level, you can work to get there. And so my advice would be to just go for it, not be afraid, be confident, and you'll love it.
And then as someone who's an athletic therapist and a trainer, what would your advice be for them to get ready for that initial basic training and their initial courses, where someone who might not have access to PSP staff or anyone like that?
Yeah. If you know anyone around you that's a military member, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. That would be awesome if someone could even run you through some of the exercises of the force test, for example, or look for a personal trainer in your area and go through the force test with them. Even though they might not be familiar with it, you can find it online and be like, how can we train for this? And have that personal trainer work you up to that.
Well, Audrey, thank you so much for your time today. And hopefully this episode reaches some women who are veterans that can sign up for the Athena program.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening. The biggest way to help support this podcast is to leave a rating and review on your Apple Podcasts and Spotify apps. You can also visit my Instagram page at Shoot Like a Girl Podcast to see photos from the guests, keep up to date with the podcast, and find out about any merchandise releases.